Hi, this is Heather Esposito, and this is Leadership by Design. Welcome to today's episode of Leadership by Design. Today's guest is Myron Maurer, who is our Vice President of Global Product Innovation, where he is responsible for the rapid development and commercialization of our new consumer products and material-based solutions. He came to us from Nike and Dow Chemical before that, where he led teams of world-class innovators with proven delivery on multiple product launches that earned 16 awards. Myron is passionate about developmental projects that involve cross-functional teamwork, business case development, database decision-making, intellectual property strategy, and external technology positioning. He holds both a bachelor's and master's of science degree in mechanical engineering from Michigan State University. And I had the privilege of meeting Myron when I did his new leader orientation, and we immediately hit it off with talking about leadership topics and specifically leading through change. And given the change we're experiencing in our business and the industry and the world at large, I just knew like we needed to put on this podcast and have you on as a guest. So welcome to our podcast today, Myron.
Thanks, Heather. It's great to be here.
Great. I'm excited to have you and talk to you a little bit more and just give the organization a chance to be able to meet you. So you're relatively new to Herman Miller. So why don't we just start off with telling us a little bit about yourself and where you came from and why you have such a passion around leading through change and really embracing change.
Yeah, so a little bit about me. I'm a native Michigander, so I'm really pleased to not only be at Herman Miller, but to truly be home back in the mitten. So I was raised in Michigan's Little Bavaria or Frankenmuth and went to Michigan State, as you mentioned. I started to cut my teeth in plastics back in the days when I was at the Dow Chemical Company, and I had the pleasure of working in 13 different businesses there. And then most recently, just was at Nike, where I got an opportunity to go to the other side of the value chain and do consumer products for the world's leader in innovation. And that was amazing. And when I think about change, Heather, and I think about my experience in going now on my third career stop, I've had two changes of my own or transitions. And, you know, when I think about change and the importance of embracing it, I'm living it out, front and center here. And I'm a big proponent of Michael Watkins' book, The First 90 Days. And how do you make that transition? I'm going through that right now. And, I also think that part of change for me is to adapt in change. And one of the things that I really tried to do when I came to Herman Miller was to reflect on what I did well in that first transition from Dow to Nike and what I didn't do so well. And Heather, what I didn't do so well in that change or transition is I didn't really appreciate and understand the history, because you come into a company, you land, and then you immediately start to talk about strategy, which is forward looking. So I had the opportunity to spend some time and to have Zoom calls with six or seven former retirees, including Brian Walker, Don Goleman, who used to run this team. So I found that fascinating, because those conversations truly did help me understand the past, but they also helped me understand the absolute magnitude of change this company's been undergoing in the last 5 years. And I can tell you that in the conversations I've had with people, it really helps them to understand the work that I've done to try to understand what they've been through, and helps me be a better empathetic leader.
And I don't know if you've had a chance or to listen to the episode that Andy did when we talked to her on the podcast. And she really talked about that same thing, that it's important to honor the past. And because, you know, again, there's always things that could have been done differently, but most of the teams that you're working with today were part of that past. So just to be dismissive of it and not embrace it and understand how you take the best of that and how do we continue to move it forward is really important. So aligned message with what Andy shared with the organization too.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe just the last comment on the question that you asked too, is that, you know, that's how I've personally been looking to navigate my own transition or change. But then of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't just acknowledge about a month after being here is when they announced the Knoll integration. So here we are. And as we embark going forward as a company, and even within the history of our industry, we're heading into unprecedented times where change is going to be at the forefront for virtually every person of NewCo, right?
Exactly. I want to circle back to something that you said. You talked about the importance of adapting, and I'm really passionate about that as a developmental professional and somebody that helps people navigate that. How do you define adapting in the change world? What does that mean to you as a leader?
I guess for me, the first thing that comes to mind, Heather, is learning to be comfortable being uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. Because that adaptive piece acknowledges that you haven't been here before. So again, when I go back to my career, I went from petrochemicals to shoes to furniture now, right? And so it's really truly about embracing that ambiguity, that it really, really trying to understand. And I'll be extremely vulnerable as a trained engineer. One of the things I've found is really trying to get out of that innate world where there's, you know, a rank and a file and a right and a wrong answer, and really, really living in that gray space. That's what I think of when I think about adaptive, as well as agile learning, right? You're never going to know everything. So how do you continuously learn?
Yeah. So like easy to say, harder to do. Like, oh, just get comfortable with being uncomfortable, live in the gray. So what do you do day to day that what are the behaviors you exhibit that help you do that well?
I think first and foremost, to truly adapt in that uncomfortable space, you have to listen. You just have to listen. So for me, I've been trying to spend a lot of time with my team, who I'm new to them, but also horizontally and in other parts of the company as well. And really trying to understand not only their role, but also to understand them for who they are and how I can tap into them for questions that I have and to really accelerate my learning as well.
And what else are you listening? Like when you're doing that, what else are you listening for? How do you get underneath what they may be saying or sometimes what they're even not saying?
I think for me, it's really trying to understand where they've been in this change paradigm. And some of them are legacy employees that have been here 20 plus years. Others have been here less than 10 years, and they've been wide-eyed to everything that's happened with a CEO change and everything that's ensued through the pandemic as well.
And again, back to this idea of adapting and learning agility. How do you get comfortable with the vulnerability piece? Because especially you're coming in new, they've hired you for your expertise. And, you know, I mean, you're new here. You want to establish your reputation and your credibility. How do you balance that with vulnerability of saying it's okay if I don't know everything, or what do I need to change?
I think for me, the thing that really resonates is I don't know everything, is really, really focusing where I can and building trust, because I have an amazing team. I have an amazing group of colleagues that I can tap into. But as a leader, again, one of the other things that I just really believe in as one of the 7 habits of highly effective people is I want to be somebody that seeks first to understand, then to be understood. And we've all experienced those people that have inverted that, right? And I don't aspire to be that person. So I would say for me, it's really, really focusing on being authentic and building trust that'll pay future dividends.
And we have a whole leadership practice called Build Trust and Belonging that really centers on how important that is as we work to cultivate connection And that will be really important as we move forward. You've been in organizations where you've been through significant change. What's the biggest lesson you have personally learned about navigating change successfully?
The first thing that comes to mind is if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I can't sum it up any better than that. So I want to go together. I want to be part of a team that goes together. And that's simple to say, but it also helps me understand that you have to go together as a team. So some people are going to be in that change paradigm at different places and spaces. And some of the best lessons I've learned is helping them acknowledge where they are in that change spectrum so that you can give them the support that they need and that the collective team can move forward. Because if others that are elated about the change start sprinting too fast, they're going fast. They're not going far.
Good point. So that's a really positive thing. A positive lesson that you've learned is to bring everyone along, go together. It could be a personal lesson or it could just have been an observation. What to you feels like the biggest caution or the biggest pitfall to watch for when trying to navigate change?
I think continuing to just watch people's body language and continuing to help understand where they're at and getting them to talk. Because people's anxiety can be in different places. But again, if you establish trust and if you really practice active listening, you can go a long ways in meeting people with where they're at. And again, as a leader, it's our job to meet people at all of the different places that they are. But I always share this with people, and it's a good reminder to myself. We have to remind ourselves that when you go through change, you form, you storm, you norm, and you perform. And we're about in the midst right now of forming. So storming, and none of that is linear. So how do you work through that storming phase? Some people will go forward, some people will go backwards. But having open communication, having trust in treating each person, meeting them where they're at, are some of the lessons that I've learned along the way.
Yeah, can we go back to that? That anxiety piece and kind of you mentioned watching for the body language, watching for sometimes the subtle signs when that let people let you know as a leader that they're not okay, but they need extra support, I guess is a better way to say that. And when you're watching for that, and you talked about empathy earlier, our last guest talked a lot about emotional intelligence and empathy. How do you as a leader approach those conversations of just recognizing that change can be uncomfortable, change can be hard, and everybody reacts to that differently? And the thing I think about is anxiety is just like the normal human emotion we have to when something feels really uncertain or when I'm feeling at risk. And how do you help people not go into like self-protective mode of, I don't know exactly what question I'm asking, but how do you as a leader think about that?
Yeah, I think sometimes it goes back again to that nothing's linear, right? Some people take one step forward, some people take two steps backward. So if I'm looking for body language or just how somebody's acting, it's understanding that, you know, maybe we need to go backwards to have conversations for the second time, for the third time to share context. You know, Heather, communication continues to be a pervasive theme on how to really move through. And, you know, sometimes my experience, both personally as a leader, as well as somebody that's been going through change as well, is sometimes it's just that I was in a space and place where I didn't process everything that you were trying to share. Maybe it's the second or the third time that we've had that conversation to just check in with how people are doing. I think that's the other part that's really important too, is I can say that I'm watching body language, and I am, but there's some times where you just need to go check in and find out how people are doing in a proactive way versus the reactive nature of, hey, Heather, I see how you're, you know, I'm noticing your body language. So I think COVID actually has been a really good reminder of that because of everybody's work from home situation and how important it's been to make sure that we're checking on each other.
And as I think about, you know, as a developmental person, one of the things I think about a lot is when we encounter resistance to change, we can sometimes assume that it's somebody that just wants to be difficult or wants to be anti-change. And that a lot of times resistance to change just comes from things that we're not even aware of. Like we have no awareness about what may be running under the surface or what beliefs we may have, what assumptions we may be making that are impeding our ability to get on board. What have you experienced when it comes to that in terms of kind of using that to leverage how we develop to meet the challenge we're facing?
Yeah, I think, again, sometimes people, it's just getting to understand what they've been through. And many times it's never the surface. It's always, you know, it's the glacier in the water, right? It's never what's coming above the water. It's really understanding what's below the water. And again, that ties back for me to really making sure that I'm building trust and authentic relationships with people. And I also think it's a comfort level, right? It's just a comfort level of, am I willing to have, can I have that conversation with my leader, or can the leader have that with one of their direct reports as well?
Yeah, that ties back to me, the idea where you were talking about trust. What do you do? You're a new leader, so you don't have a long track record with your team yet. I mean, they only know you for a certain period of time based in a certain set of circumstances. So how do you as a leader, or what are you doing personally to create the space for those more open, vulnerable conversations, or saying, I just don't feel sure? How are you going about that when you don't have a track record of relationship?
Well, yeah, first and foremost, it's just trying to drive as much active listening as possible with folks. You know, it's vulnerability. You can always use the new guy syndrome, right? And I do, but I'm reminded by Herman Miller people that expires at a certain period of time, right? I think what's really important there, Heather, is, again, I go back to my foundational principle: seek first to understand, then to be understood, right? And I think it's really important to just continue to acknowledge that you're making progress, right? And there's some people that will listen to this podcast that work for me that know that it's been about the third time that we've been through that. So I'm being vulnerable here that when I talked about, you know, the fact that somebody might need to hear it for the second or third time. But I think for me, I just continue to think about not trying to be more than who I am and to go at the right pace, because I'm also blessed to have a team that was functioning before I got here. Yeah. And I think sometimes to be a good leader, it's to be mindful of just know who you are and the role that you're playing here.
Yeah, when you keep talking about active listening, and for those who are listening to the podcast that have been through our coaching program, we have a pretty robust model around, it's not just listening. Listening is one side of it. Listening is actually for the listener, it's my internal process. So I'm hearing you speak on this podcast and the listening is happening inside my head. You have no idea whether I'm understanding you the way that you want to be understood, what I'm taking in, what I'm not taking in. And so we talk about the speaking side of that being the flip side of the listening coin. So when I come back to you and I'm confirming that this is what I heard, is that what you were trying to communicate? Or I ask you another question that follows onto that thought, that is how I indicate to you as the speaker that I have been listening. And so I think sometimes we talk about listening and it's like, I can sit here and nod my head and go, uh-huh, got it, Myron. Yep, I agree with you, Myron. And you have no idea whether I really got it, whether I really heard you. So there's a speaking half of that where you're giving back to somebody else, at least what you took from the conversation. Doesn't mean you're right or wrong. It's just, this is what I took away from what you just said that confirms for someone else that you were listening. Does that resonate with you?
Completely. It's being a good receptor. But the other thing, Heather, is as a new leader, it's also to just slow down at times and say, I want to stop right now, make playback what I think I heard and correct, so that you can show them that you're hearing what they're saying, but you're also being vulnerable with the fact that you have a lot of knowledge and I want to make sure that I'm getting it all.
Are you familiar with the concept of psychological safety? Is that in your vocabulary or been exposed to that concept before?
Yes. And it's something I'm extremely passionate about because that psychological safety is, especially in the role that I am in, having the pleasure of leading an innovation organization. Anybody that goes back to, some of the recent roots of psychological safety knows that emanates back to Google. And, some of the assumptions that were made of great teams are all about just putting the brightest people together. And what they were humbled by was the answer is no. It's, do they have candor? Do they have the ability to speak up without fear of retribution? And Heather, when I think about that, I think about how amazing that place is to work and how diverse and inclusive and how belonging that drives. So yes, familiar with it and a passionate advocate of implementing that going forward.
Yeah. So how do you go about that? Anything additional specifically related to creating psychological safety where people feel safe to bring new ideas forward to be innovative?
Yeah. So we just, as an example, just had our engagement survey action planning meeting. And we just literally yesterday and our team, we thought it was going to maybe take 2 hours. It was a 6.5 hour conversation.
Wow.
And it was a great opportunity for people to be engaged, to open up. But Heather, part of that is to create the right environment is to not to assume. So we're going to actually order books on psychological safety, and we're going to walk through this fiscal year chapter by chapter, having just an open dialogue and conversation about how might we create that kind of space that we too can be psychologically safe. And as a leader, the reason I tie in our engagement yesterday is that's also part of giving and getting feedback as well.
Yeah, something that just stuck out to me, and I think it's a trap we can all fall into. I'm sure that I've fallen into it at times is, well, we've got 2 hours blocked for this meeting, so we need to get the action plan created. And so like this topic is a 2 hour topic period. We'll produce what we need to. And what I also just heard from you is like, no, the conversation needed 6 hours. So I gave the conversation 6 hours. Our action plan involves a continuous learning and actually bringing the team into creating and owning that environment for the team versus something you're doing as a leader. But
it was the most impactful engagement action plan I've ever been involved with in my 28 years of being in industry. And again, it was because I didn't have to pull information out. I didn't have to try to engage, disengage participants. Everybody was there, and it was a special session.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love to hear those kinds of stories because that's what helps our organization get stronger in the long run.
Absolutely. And again, it was all centered on conversation and dialogue, right?
Yep, exactly. Back to those common themes, communication, building trust, listening, like those keep coming around over and over again. I've got a question for you. This one's a little bit more personal because we do talk to our leaders about leadership being a practice. It's a developmental journey. You never get there because as soon as you're there, there's a new horizon. So what are you working on in your own leadership right now? What's calling you to a higher level?
Right now for me, it's really about embracing a growth mindset. Mm-hmm. And again, that's because, I need to be able to build their skills and help them learn and grow. So for me, I'm really trying to embrace that as a leader right now, so that I can be that champion for them and acknowledge the fact that I've been here 4 months, but that we're running this race together.
I love that one too. What else does, for you personally, what does growth mindset mean as a leader? Is it about holding yourself in a growth mindset, holding a growth mindset about your team? What does that mean?
I think it's all of the above, anybody that listens to Satya Nadella at Microsoft, I mean, he's one of the advocates, right? So for me, it's really easy, Heather, to be somebody that's new in the company for 4 months. It's, what do I know about the industry? What do I know about the products? What do I know about now Noel's product offering? So, and I also think as a leader, it's never my job to be the smartest person in the room, right? So it's really trying to understand how do we get then the team to work together, not only within our team, but cross-functionally as well, because we have the opportunity to do amazing work when we collaborate together.
Yeah, one of the people we partner with, Trevor Reagan, we've featured him on the podcast a couple of times. Growth Mindset is his business. And I loved what he talked about in one of his podcasts. He said, if I saw everyone around me as a learner, like how would I give feedback differently if I saw you as a learner? How would I give you opportunities to grow if I put the word learner by your name? And I was like, that's such an amazing way. I mean, I know that I would sometimes talk to my kids differently. I would talk to my coworkers differently if I wasn't looking at what I already thought you should do, didn't do, know how to do. Just said like, wow, this person's learning. So how would I talk to somebody who's learning something, and how would I give them feedback? How would I teach them?
One of the other things that I think goes along with that, Heather, is that I've tried to make a priority is not just understanding the people on my team for what they do and have done at Herman Miller. I'm blessed with a team of 8 people that have over 200 years of industrial work experience. Wow. So to really help me understand how to leverage them, how to develop and grow them, is to know their entire self. So that's been extremely valuable. And as I mentioned earlier, as I've connected across the company, I've tried to do that with other people as well. And you learn fascinating things about people. And, the other thing that harkens me back to is my time at Nike. Is one of their leadership philosophies was around the theory of multipliers and how do you grow people. And that's understanding the genius that people possess. And some of where you can get that is not only in what they've done at Herman Miller, but also in their prior life as well. And it starts to connect some dots.
I'm sure you've heard the Millwright story since you've been here. Yeah, and it goes right to our value of we believe we're all extraordinary. And if we are all extraordinary, what is it about you that makes you extraordinary? What is it about me that makes me extraordinary? And how can we leverage that in service of what we're trying to accomplish together?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a powerful story.
It is. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. I think that was the moment that like, I gave my heart to Herman Miller when I heard that story. I'm like, that is so cool. I just, it sounds like lore, but it's part of our history. It's part of our story. And it's what I love about the human centeredness of who we are. We talk about designing for the good of humankind, but at our foundation, I mean, we're just human centric, and that involves the whole person.
I must say, the first time you get together as a group of new hires, and when they take you through the history of the company, it's a goosebump moment, right? To go back to DJ Dupree and the fact of, all right, now I'm testing myself, Gilbert Rhodes, but I mean, how different they were. Yeah. But when you think about the world that we're in today and diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, and to think about how the founder of Herman Miller embraced that decades ago, it's a pretty special, pretty powerful. And like you, I'm blessed to be here.
Yeah, it's a shame that you've only been with us 4 months. It is part of the sales organization specifically because they carry our culture out to the customer base. Part of their new hire experience, it's actually like a physical tour through Zealand. And one of our employees that has been with us for the longest, she's now retired, but is the docent basically. And so she's talking about her personal stories. You're at the landmark where that story happened. And then you go to her home and she's got Herman Miller for it. I mean, everything, all the archived products in her home. And it is just like, I don't know. It's the total, like, all right, I'm all in, like, that's it. And there's so much physicality to even the experience you described, but actually going to all the places and hearing the firsthand story. I'm just like, this is amazing. This is totally amazing.
For me, the other experience, I've been blessed to have the opportunity to visit Fulton Market and to be on the third floor and to have all of that history there right in front of you. It's a pretty powerful display and a pretty powerful moment for anybody.
Yeah. We definitely have a story to tell.
You sure do.
So I'm assuming is embrace a growth mindset your favorite one of our leadership principles or practices, or is it one of the other ones? Or is that just where you're working right now?
That's where I'm working. But my favorite principle is still build trust and belonging, because without it, you know, I think of a house, that's the foundation. And if you don't have that foundation established, everything that you do above that is going to be suspect. So for me, the other thing, Heather, I always think of, I've shared this with my team, you know, sometimes let's not make leadership overly too hard though either, right? And I always try to check myself at the door to say, is that the kind of team I'd want to be on? Mm. And again, when I think of some of the greatest teams that I've been on or some of the greatest leaders that I've had the privilege of working with, every one of them that come to mind with a smile on my face always had tremendous trust and belonging. So yeah. For me, that's the one. And on top of it, it serves anybody well, not only within, their professional life, but in their personal life as well.
I agree. And that if you read into the description of that, that is where psychological safety lies for us. I mean, we really do believe if you want to have a high performing team, it's all of those pieces that go into that so that we can bring our best selves and not have to worry about what's somebody going to think about me. Is my idea going to be shot down? Is it going to be a stupid question? Like I want everybody to be able to bring all of that to the table and still know that we can have disagreements. That's the other thing sometimes I think a lot about is I'll hear sometimes people talk about psychological safety in the context of pop psychology, like, or positive psychology that like, oh, it means that like nobody ever feels bad. I'm like, actually it means exactly the same thing. It means that we can rumble on something. We can come with different perspectives and opinions and have hard conversations and still be in relationship with others, with still have trust, still belong. Even when we have hard conversations, it's actually kind of the opposite of that.
Heather, I hope I don't offend any Michigan Wolverines here, but from a sporting analogy standpoint, I'm a Michigan State Spartan, but I think of Tom Izzo, right? A great basketball, Hall of Fame basketball coach, but on the sideline, he can have tirades with players and want to rip their neck off. You'll see him hugging them. I think it's some of that challenging and, and I think that's special about psychological safety. Obviously, in the professional workplace, there's a right way to do that, right? Yep. And still have respect for others. But I guess the last thing about building trust and belonging that I really like as well is you're right. Not only is it call out psychological safety, but it also says that we seek and accept diverse experiences and backgrounds. And again, that's been really, really important to me. And I think as a company, we have a lot of opportunity in the future to drive improvements in those spaces.
That's how we get better together.
Absolutely. And think about that in the context of it's still business as usual, but what's going to play out here in the coming months, right? We're going to have a whole lot of diversity and a whole lot of backgrounds to tap into.
Yeah, that's exciting. That's the really exciting part.
It really is. It really is.
Well, I also like to end every episode with four rapid fire questions. Will you play with me?
I will play with you. Let's go.
Okay. All right. You ready? So the first one is a fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. Leadership is
amazing.
Leadership is amazing. That's a new one. We haven't had that one yet. A leader you admire and why?
Tony Bignell. I had the pleasure of working with him at my entire time at Nike. And he had two phrases that really stuck with me and embodied him is clear is kind and work hard and be nice. And I can't think of a better way of reinforcing. By the way, that doesn't mean that he was a pushover. But at the end of the day, that's what he embodied. And Heather, the more I've been around people and lead people, keeping it simple is absolutely critical in every aspect of what we do.
All right. I know these are supposed to be rapid fire, but can I ask you a question about that? Like, absolutely. What does, because I've heard Brené Brown use clear as kind too. What did that mean for you? What is clear as kind?
That meant for me, and that my former role was in innovation, and I'm in an innovation here as well, is there's a lot of ambiguity. So sometimes as a leader, it's the way that you can clear the runway is to try to just clarify things and help people get through the ambiguity to move forward, whether that's their role, whether that's how we move forward on the program. That was what Tony did an amazing job of.
And when I hear Brené talk about it too, she also uses it in the vein of feedback or pick your word, but that if we are not clear by telling people what we expect or when something is not being done up to the level of expectation, for example, that if we're not clear about that, that we really are being unkind. Like I think sometimes we think we may like, oh, well, I'm going to be nice. I don't want to hurt their feelings. But now I'm not contributing to helping you be able to improve, get better, change that. So really when you're unclear, it's unkind. And she usually couches it around that idea of feedback and growth.
My team just told me yesterday in our engagement action plan that clear for them is don't worry if we don't have drafted goals and performance reviews. We still want to know what you expect of me written down. So that's an example of clear as kind. I think exactly with what you're saying.
Yeah. It means lots of different things in lots of different contexts.
It does.
All right. What are you currently reading?
What am I currently reading? I'm reading The Theory of Multipliers again.
Are you? That's a great book.
Yeah. I love that book. I love it. I love it.
And what do you love about your work?
So bringing solutions that we once thought were inconceivable or impossible, making the impossible possible. That's what I love. That's what I love about innovation.
I love that. In fact, that actually fires me up. Somebody's like, I don't know if we can do that, or I don't know if that's possible. It's like, oh, all right, let me go to work on that.
The other one that I like is how do we turn compromise into promise? Let's get rid of the com. Again, it's just that's what great innovation organizations do. I'm super passionate about it.
I love that. I've never heard that one before. That's a new one. Well, Myron, I thank you so much for spending time today, sharing your experiences and sharing with our leaders how you're thinking about that, especially as a new leader to the organization. I think we've featured in the past a couple of leaders that have had extensive experience and backgrounds here at the organization. So it's nice to hear a fresh perspective of someone who's coming in from the outside with a varied bank of experiences and also have a lot to share with us about how we can think about this next chapter and how we're going to navigate change as leaders. So thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me, Heather. It's been a pleasure.
Great. Thank you, Myron. And remember, everyone deserves to have a great leader. So keep working at being the best leader you can be. Until next time. This podcast is an original production of Global Talent Management at Herman Miller Group. It's hosted by me, Heather Esposito, and produced in music by Sean Beck.